1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Hello, hello, hello.
Fresh, extra peppery fresh. Welcome back to the Slim Tax podcast with myself, Dr. Syntax.
And me, Ginger Slim. That's good to have you back. Good to be back.
With a podcast that is sporadically active, but we always get back at it, and it's always a classic.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's all
I've got. That's it, right. Mm. Goodbye.
Yeah, so it's been a little while. Luckily, all is well with the world.
Yeah.
And there's nothing but joy to rejoice through the airwaves.
Exactly, exactly.
Although, I mean, I don't know if we want to talk about what's going on in the world, if we just want to, like, create a little warm shroud that people can snuggle up in.
I think we should avoid it, personally.
Okay.
Just because we all know what's going on and it's a shit show and I'm...
Yeah, of course.
I can offer nothing of any worth to the conversation, basically. I can offer you no... I don't know.
I agree wholeheartedly. All we can do is talk in sound bites and go round and round. And
yeah, I'm just going to repeat the same things you heard already. You know, the only thing I would say is just be... Don't worry too much.
Yeah.
Like, things will get better, but just... I don't know.
Yeah, don't worry.
Just look after yourselves.
Don't worry and don't be a dick.
Yeah. That's it.
There you go. That's some passive aggression to kick things off. Tim, how are you? How's your week been? What's the best thing that's happened?
The best thing that's happened is I worked on a PR campaign for one of my favourite rap groups in the world.
Oh, really?
I won't go into too much detail.
You can't reveal the details.
No, but I've, yeah, that's it's my second commission for them as well. So that's been... They actually came back to me, which is always a good sign.
So you're getting some paid work as a writer in 2020.
I know, it's mad.
As a music writer.
Yeah. And international as well. This is an American...
international, an American baby.
Yeah. So, that was a good little boost.
But you're not flying out there anytime soon.
No. I don't think that's an option these days.
No.
Those days are over for being flown out to the US to... No, it's all Skype calls and they're like...
Thank goodness for the internet.
Yeah, in small doses. What about you?
Not too bad. A solid 6 out of 10, which is pretty good these days. Cruising along. What happened to me? Oh, the new single came out with The Allergies.
Yes,
I'm going to get my plug in there.
Got your Rylan there.
Well, I wanted to talk about that. So, got some airplay on Radio 2. I think he played a Steps song, Sonic. Rylan, I don't know his surname, but Rylan.
What was he from originally?
I guess we're not the target audience really, but the fella, I think he was on Big Brother originally.
Okay.
I know him as he's on Celebrity Gogglebox sometimes,
right?
Which is on in our lounge at my house occasionally, and he's there chin wagging with his mum. And then suddenly there he is playing an Allergies tune with me on it. And cool. Fair play to Rylan. What's his
Mate.
Face? Him off the telly.
Yeah.
That was a nice surprise that made me chuckle.
Yeah.
What else?
You did a gig.
I did a gig, yes.
You did a gig.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Attic Bar.
Yeah, big shout out to the Attic Bar.
And Vicky and all them.
And indeed everyone trying to put on gigs in these times. But it was an interesting experience. It was really good fun, first of all. Like, it's so odd because, the last gig I had was in March, and I'd only had a few gigs so far in the year. You know, it was sort of gearing up for summer, and then normally this time of year in October, November, I'm normally putting a release out and doing a tour or something like that. So, but obviously none of that. And I found myself being pretty nervous, kind of about to do a show for the first time in a few months. And it was almost like starting again. It was really odd.
Yeah.
And obviously, I spent the best part of 20 years trying to get people to come forward, make loads of noise, hug each other, spit in each other's mouths, this sort of shit, the normal.
Lick and, taps.
Exactly. Get right on that nozzle.
Yeah.
In the limescale bit. Chip that limescale
off.
Instead, obviously, everyone had to sit down, and I kind of had to take a bit of a schoolmasterly stance and be like, have fun. But not
Jenkins,
fun.
Stop dancing.
Sit down, yeah. Literally, yeah. There was a few people, a few rascals.
Yeah.
A few jokers in the
back. Kept back behind afterwards.
I mean, the whole experience, of course... Attic did a good job having seats all around the place. Mm. And
nice. Yeah, the setup looked quite good.
Yeah, it
was should point out at this juncture I didn't actually go to the gig.
He was there in spirit, ladies.
Yeah.
Tim is like a patron saint in
the Attic. I'm actually haunting Stoke Croft.
You and many others get in the queue, sunshine. So everyone was sitting down, and I felt like there was a real, desire for a gig. People have not had any live music for a while, and I was buzzing to be there as well. And of course, I had the legendary chart sensation Pete Cannon behind me there, doing the damn thing, playing a few tunes and spinning the joints. We were trying to keep it lively, but not too lively. So we had to curtail his jungle bit. He would normally go into a big jungle rinse out at the end of the set, but that was off the menu, really. Fun in moderation, guys. Fun in moderation.
Mm.
But it was good. It was good to break the duck, and fuck knows if that's happening anytime soon again, but fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Give me a shout and I'll come and
do a 6-person rave that finishes at 10 o'clock. Be massive.
I'll pop round to your barbecue with a mini rig.
He's not even joking. He will do that. You won't even have to be invited.
Mm. Well, this is it. I've seen a number of MCs have taken on other jobs. I saw a bass man for the drum and bass scene. He had an advert where he's saying, "I'll come to your party. I'll cook some food in the garden." He totally sent for Jamie Oliver and Gordon Ramsay. He's like, "Fuck those guys. The bass man's the real chef." And it's absolutely beautiful. And so he's working that angle.
Yeah.
Dynamite
adapt,
MC.
Adapt, evolve. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I was going to say Dynamite, but I think he's been. I don't think that's a lockdown.
No,
venture,
no, no.
Is it? I think we both discovered today that Dynamite MC of represent fame and just drum and bass MC extraordinaire has a side hustle as a sommelier. I think that's the right pronunciation, like a wine taster who recommends wines in a very posh restaurant in London, and he's been doing that for quite a while.
Fair play to him.
Yeah, fair play to him.
What a smooth dude.
Mm-hmm. Genuine.
Bristol
legend.
I think we're going to see a lot more of that. Even established names within music suddenly coming out with a little side move.
Mm.
Because the foreseeable future, the industry is struggling to get back on to what it was.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. It was what it was. Here we are. It's out of our control. Mm. Lots of people are doing streaming and things. I'd really like to get into something like that. Just like a little jam or something in Bristol.
Do you have the means to do it here properly?
At my studio right here, possibly, but I've been linking with a few different people speaking.
Oh, you've got
about
something to do,
in Bristol, because there's a lot of it's almost like a reset button, it's like start again and get back onto this, and as opposed to this time of year, as I said already, it'd be like gear up for the tour, learn some songs, go and do all this sort of shit, sort of professional performer type stuff, but now it's like all that's gone, so. I think I speak for a lot of people that think, well, I still want to do it. I still want to scratch that itch. So it's figuring out a way to just keep the engine ticking, So, maybe it'll be a little cipher thing. Maybe it's utilizing something like Twitch or something just so it's out there and people can see it. But I don't know exactly what format that will entail.
Yeah, Twitch seems to be becoming the new platform for everything. It's weird because it was initially a gaming thing, is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
For watching gamers play games, and now I know Blind Boy uses it, but he uses
Blind
it for gaming.
Boat Club, yeah.
I mean, it's just he just space and Limmy as well. I quite like the way they've adapted it to sort of fit their comedy stylings.
Yeah, definitely. I was watching. I saw Limmy on Twitch the other day, and he plays a game called Dead by Daylight. Which is a kind of horror. It's like a teen slasher movie in game form, and he's obviously got a bunch of people, like fans or whatever, that are gamers that he's got on there. But he plays the baddie at this point. He was Michael Myers with the knife out, and then they have to run around and like fiddle with some generators or something and get some equipment working. Meanwhile, he's just hunting them down and slashing them. So you're seeing it from his perspective, and he's just being creepy. And
it's just Limmy. He's just creepy anyway. He's just
amazing.
Yeah.
But I guess that's it. Like within creative arts, you can see people trying to adapt what they do or wear another hat.
I find it really interesting. I mean, given the fact that it's it's the necessity. I find it really interesting, almost exciting to see what people are coming up with.
I guess it's humans doing what humans do. As depressing as everything is in the world right now, you know, there's always creativity finds a way. Everything finds a way. Mm. You know, humans are very adaptable.
Life finds a way. All right, Goldblum.
Damn. Wonder how life Jeff's getting on.
Finds a way.
What is he doing? Where's his podcast?
Yeah,
where's him?
Probably got his shirt open somewhere.
He's done very well to. I don't really remember him being like a sex symbol.
Isn't he like a proper like jazz musician now?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he's done that. He's like released albums and stuff. He plays piano, I think.
What a don. Him and Hugh Laurie.
Yeah.
Just banging it out.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he's not touring now. Maybe he's got a Twitch channel. Big up to Jeff.
That would be great.
Yeah, so fuck it. I don't know. Did you see that they tried to get the Batman movie rolling again and then Robert Pattinson got COVID, so they had to stop? Fuck. I mean, he's a strapping young man. I'm hoping that he will be fine. But that's mad. It sort of came one day to the next. It was like, look, Hollywood's back with Batman. It's happening. Here's the trailer.
Yeah.
And it looked kind of grim as well.
The trailer was weird. It was like, because I watched, basically that prompted me to watch The Crow.
Oh, right.
Rewatch The Crow, because The Crow was trending on Twitter. And I was like, why is it, you know, The Crow with Bruce
Brandon
Lee's son, Brandon Lee, RIP, lost his life on that set, didn't he?
Oh, fucking hell, yeah.
Remember it was like it was supposed to be a fake bullet, and he shot with a real bullet somehow. And it was like, that's when the curse of his family came out, because his dad had died in mysterious circumstances on set as well. It was all very strange.
Oh,
but the Crow was trending. I was like, what's The Crow trending? Clicked in, it was because Pattinson looks exactly like The Crow in the trailer for Batman. So he's like, he's almost looks like the Joker. He looks depressed. Goth.
Yeah, right.
But then that's how you should, like, the whole Bruce Wayne being some like jovial bachelor, his parents are murdered, like he should be like that sort of depressed. I don't know, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm going to end up watching it, but I don't know how thirsty I am for new Batman.
No.
Or hungry, I suppose. Thirsty means something else now, doesn't it? I'm always thirsty for Batman. Fucking, he's quite brutal in it as well. I remember, you know, everything's a sign of the times. You know, you get the Batman for the era, I suppose.
Yeah.
60s, swinging 60s,
camp, flamboyant.
Adam West whamming and powering it up.
Yeah.
And then, like, obviously, Michael Keaton for me. You know, I'm showing my age there. That's the one, you know, that early. What do you think about that? Do you like 1990 or 1989 Batman?
Well, the original one, like the actual first original Batman, as in with Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
That was my favourite, with Jack Nicholson as a Joker.
Exactly.
They had that comic book element, you know, with a long gun.
We can call that the original, can't we?
I think that's the original.
I mean, technically you've got...
There was the Batman film in the 60s with the boat where they're trying to work out where to throw the bomb.
Was that Adam West? So that was film of...
So that was the actual
TV
film
show.
The series.
Yeah.
But yeah, that original, so Tim Burton Batman was the original... But the ones after that, I wasn't a fan of as much.
No, they weren't as good.
Well, the second one was that with... There was one with...
It was Tim Burton. Both the first two were Tim Burton films, right?
Yeah, but there was... Would he do two or three? Because he did the Riddler and the Catwoman one.
I think Joel Schumacher did the Riddler.
Right, okay. Because I know it changed after, because there's one with Mr. Freeze, which I really didn't like.
Yeah, that was the shittest one. That's Batman and Robin, isn't it? Yeah. That is universally panned as like one of the worst films ever.
I remember them jumping onto like some metal thing. And it had holes in it, and Robin going, "Holy rusty metal, Batman!" And me going, "No," turning off.
I think there's a supercut on YouTube of just all the really shit bits of that film.
Oh, great.
That is well worth watching for 10 minutes. Like, that is much better than the film. There's just lots of Arnie going, "Oh, you need to freeze." That sounded more like Werner Herzog. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah. Do you want to know my Werner Herzog story? Do you know this about...
No.
Talking about... what's his name? Joaquin Phoenix.
No,
he was involved in a car accident and his car flipped over on some road somewhere in the middle of nowhere in America. And he was like losing consciousness and he just heard this, "You're going to be okay." And it was Werner Herzog.
Wow.
Just pulled him out of the wreckage, the burning wreckage.
Wow.
That's amazing. And Joaquin Phoenix was like, "Oh, I wasn't sure if I was like dreaming. At this point, because it's like, am I alive? I just died." But obviously, he was like, "You're going to be okay," and just pulled him out of the wreckage. While some onlookers rang an ambulance. That's amazing, isn't it?
Oh man, that makes me love me more.
Yeah.
Werner Herzog is that guy that I really really respect and really entertained by his work. It just seems like I don't want to know too much about him because there's a dark secret hidden there. That might be complete slander, but it always feels like that. Like he's too interesting and sort of it's creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to be something lurking.
But he's also really like, in the, you know, Parks and Rec, the series Parks and Recreation.
Yeah, I haven't watched that much of it.
American comedy show, really, really one of my favourites, man. Honestly, like it takes a little while to get into, bit of a slow burner, but when you do, really good. But he's in one episode that plays a cameo, and this couple are trying to buy this house, which is basically haunted. It can't sell, and he's the bloke who's trying to sell it, and he's just in these scenes. He's in like three scenes in the whole series, but it's just perfect. Like he's just so weird.
I love the way that he's this, you know,
the go-to guy for like being
incredible documentary maker and filmmaker in general. That's made some very odd films, but is held in very high esteem. And then he'll do just weird little cameos as an actor as well. He's in the Mandalorian as well, the Disney series.
Right, okay, I haven't seen that.
And he's have you seen, do you know Star Wars? And,
yeah, I know, yeah.
So he plays, I mean, it's not a spoiler, it's in the first episode, but like, so it's set after, it's set before the new films and after the original trilogy.
Right.
So the Empire has fallen and whatnot, and they're all scattered. Mm-hmm. And he plays some sort of imperial general or whatever, just in a bunker, and the Mandalorian bounty hunter goes in, and there's like stormtroopers there and whatnot. It's wicked, you know. It's, it's like, yeah, of course he's a fucking bossing stormtroopers about wearing a cape, you know, perfect. And like, there's this whole, I mean, again, not a spoiler, I think this is in the trailers or whatever, but there's a child that, that he is after, and he's commissioned this bounty hunter to get. He's just saying, bring the child to me. It's like, wow, this is freaky. Mandalorian is wicked, by the way. I think there's a new series coming up.
No, it's one of those things. It's like, remember last time when I had the Star Trek revelation on the last podcast we did, and I was like, I've started watching Star Trek.
Yeah,
and you were like, this is one of the best moments of my life. And I'm in a similar thing with Star Wars. Like, I enjoyed the Star Wars films when I was a kid. The new ones I haven't bothered with because it's never been something that I've related to that well, but the series I'm very but what's it on, is it on, because it's Disney Plus, isn't it? Yeah, so yeah,
it's on the internet.
I'll have to source it from
you have to pay
an alternative streaming service.
But yeah, fucking well worth it. I mean, I think it's the most expensive TV show ever made or something. Someone was telling me just about the set and showing me pictures of like some crazy new technology where they have some sort of crazy 3D huge, God knows what. I'm doing a bad job of explaining it, but yeah, it looks incredibly stunning. It's got that fella, that fella off that thing. What's his name? Pascal something or other. He's in Game of Thrones. He gets his head smashed in by the mountain. Spoiler alert. Have you seen that?
No, I don't watch Game of Thrones. All right,
okay.
I'm one of them.
He's also in Sicario.
Just keep naming things I haven't seen.
Drug things.
Narcos.
Narcos. Yeah. You know the
The other cop, not the blonde cop. The other one. The Spanish cop.
Him. He's the Mandalorian.
Right. Oh, okay.
And,
cool.
But you you don't see him because you know that's part of their code. The Mandalorians. They don't take their helmet off.
Yeah. It's the whole like, what's his, who was he?
Boba Fett. Yeah. That's Boba Fett.
That,
in
that
Star
same
Wars.
Like, yeah.
So, Mandalorians kind of like, that's the sort of race of them, who are these like very honor bound, like Spartans, really.
Yeah.
These warriors. And
that's everything their life is about, that.
I think he, like, I'm going to mangle this up, but Boba Fett and then his dad, Jango Fett, he was supposed to be, he's the original clone, isn't he, from those shit films?
Right.
Or the clones in the Clone Wars were cloned from Jango Fett.
Right.
And Boba Fett's a clone of him as well. And they kind of, they're not actually proper Mandalorians. They're disgraced ones or something, or they just jack the equipment or something like that, but they're not the real deal. Whereas, you get into it anyway.
Yeah, I want to, because I've heard a lot of, you know, good shit, and I'm more veering towards that sort of, I don't know, space fantasy style.
Well, yeah.
It was just something that never really interested me before, but I think it's just me being obstinate, either.
Nice bit of escapism.
Exactly,
goes a long
and that's
way
what I need
point,
at the moment,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that, yeah, that's really, really high end. Like the new films were all right. The first one was kind of cool, and it had like flashes of hope and excitement of like, oh, they're going to get this right. And yeah, exactly. Literally. But as it panned out...
Did it just become too Disney? Is that right? Because that's what I've heard a lot.
I'm a 39-year-old man. Maybe I'm not the target audience anymore. I could just let that go. And that's fine. But it just felt...
I think you should get angry about it and write about it on the internet.
I should fucking get...
There aren't enough people doing that sort of thing.
Kick off about it on a podcast, a hip-hop podcast.
Yeah. Do that.
And post that on the internet. Basically what I'm trying to say is, keeping it positive, The Mandalorian, that's the best thing that Disney's done for a while. It's the best thing that Star Wars has definitely done for a while. And there's a new series. It's all based on like spaghetti westerns as well and shit. And I've been getting really into... spaghetti westerns recently as well, like
Sergio Leone and
and just those Ennio Morricone scores. R.I.P. again.
He scored something like it's a ridiculous amount of films. I can't even remember the number, but it's insane.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And just not just that, like Once Upon a Time in America and stuff like that. Like, doesn't he do all those, like a lot of the gangster films as well?
That's right. So it wasn't a bunch of things. He's done so many things that. I was listening to a playlist. There's a playlist on Spotify by Edgar Wright that is just the go-to shit for Ennio Morricone. You could go do a lot worse than checking them out. He stuck it on, and a sample came on of a tune that I'm on. It's like, what the fuck? This is where it's from. So Edgar Wright did some digging, snitching, sample snitching.
While we're talking about TV, I'll give you a recommendation. Which is Lovecraft Country.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't talk about this last time, did we?
I don't know.
But I know you're a Lovecraft fan.
Yeah.
Do you know that book? Lovecraft Country?
No.
So basically, this is a new series, which is made by Jordan Peele.
Right.
As in Get Out, Us, Key and Peele, but more the first two. And an American... director whose name I've forgotten, but you would know if I said it. He's very well known. Anyway, him and Jordan Peele have made this adaptation of a book called Lovecraft Country, which I'm not sure of the exact plot surrounding it, but from what I've seen, it's set in the Jim Crow era of American history.
Right.
So it deals with racism, as a lot of Jordan Peele stuff does, but intertwined with Lovecraft's stories. So there's an underlying plot, which is that this black family realise that they are the heirs to some fortune.
Right.
And they travel through the Deep South to try and find their fortune, and then come across these horrendous racists along the way, and also these weird interpretations of Lovecraft stories. So each episode is like a different story.
Oh, sick.
And it's like, there's a couple of bits where it's like, well, this isn't going too well, but there's the majority of it is really, really good, man. Like, I just watched, I think there's 5 or 6 episodes out now, so it's still being shown in the US. I've seen like 3 episodes. The third episode was, I don't want to put too many spoilers, but it was like about a haunted house, basically, where there've been like experiments conducted on black people by some racist doctor,
right,
and their ghosts were still haunting the place, and then this family bought the house. It's a really good, I don't know, because it's so poignant because of what's happening in the States at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is what Jordan Peele's always really good at, is like nailing the fact that things haven't changed in the US at all.
Yeah.
Between then and now.
So is Lovecraft Country, is that a book?
Yeah, so apparently that's a book that was written by who? That's the thing, I don't know the ins and outs of the book, but I'm assuming it's the similar thing. But I don't know if it's actually... from my own understanding of it, it's like a separate story each time, but with this plot that threads it together.
Right. This is really interesting. Like, Lovecraft himself, like, his books, his short stories, I've only ever read his short stories, I don't know if he's got any novels, but they're the most creepy things I've ever read, definitely, as far as like horror writing goes. Like, that's the stuff that's really like sounded grim. I've actually felt on edge reading it. Say that about Stephen King and things, and that's cool, that's good, it's entertaining.
But it
doesn't leave you unsettled. It doesn't leave me unsettled, maybe it does other people, but this Lovecraft really makes me feel like, oh, this is really quite horrible. But him himself, he apparently was a massive racist,
right,
even by the standards of the time he was alive, and kind of died in poverty And so his story is pretty twisted as any of his stories that he wrote. So it's interesting to me that it's been, his ideas are amazing and creepy and twisted and are definitely hugely influential on lots of science fiction and horror that we have today. So it's interesting that someone's taken that and twisted it and made it, the focus of it, be about racism in America.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the first scene, like the protagonist, because there's a main protagonist and he's dreaming. You don't realise he's dreaming, but he's like in, he's in, because he's an ex-soldier and he's in his military uniform and he's in a war, fighting war, and then suddenly like Cthulhu appears.
Right.
But he's in a dream state and you don't realise that at the start. You're like, fuck, mate, this is going to be weird.
Oh, God.
And then yeah. He wakes up and he's like, oh, shit, that, he was just dreaming. But like Cthulhu's in it from
time to time. Yeah, he's in the dream.
Yeah. So it's like this, yeah. It's, and I think he's going to reappear later on from what I've, you know, hinted at in the other episode, so
yeah. I think it almost like it's a strange thing, you know, especially nowadays, you know, you have this culture of almost like you can only appreciate art if the person who's made it is a kind of stand-up character or whatever, whereas, you know, that completely defies that. I really appreciate Lovecraft's art. It's amazing horror writing, but he himself was clearly a fucked up person. Oh. And deplorable opinions on things. It kind of adds to like the sort of creepiness of it, really.
Because then you take into his account his actual views, and you're like, oh, you actually meant that.
Well, there's a sort of poignancy.
I think I've never read the fact that stuff.
It's been taken,
sure.
The fact that it's been picked up and then flipped. So it's like, yeah, we'll have your ideas, but we're going to make them completely the opposite of what you would be, you would want for them.
But that is kind of quite a Jordan Peele thing, I think. It seems to be that sort of where he, I don't know, because I can see Lovecraft influencing Jordan Peele's work because of the horror, the type of horror he makes, where it's like normal situations with this really unnerving undercurrent, just like you don't, something's going to happen, something bad's going to happen. But then taking that, like you said, and then saying, well, I know you were a racist motherfucker, so I'm now going to flip it on its head.
I mean, there's lots of stuff that people have taken Lovecraftian bits and bobs. I wonder, I suppose.
Well, Cthulhu has like spread, like that's become like a sort of cultural reference across.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, that's like the one that. If people haven't heard of Lovecraft, they've often heard of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's the crazy octopus headed god that.
What is he? Is he a god? Is he a demon?
He's a.
I just think I've never read any of his.
The whole gist of it is he's a god under the sea that's a kind of demonic thing that's just waiting to rise, and he's appearing to people in dreams and they're trying to raise him up, and everything kind of, there's the Call of Cthulhu, that's the main sort of story that he's known for, and that's the kind of rise of Cthulhu, but everything is all kind of linked to him in a sort of wider shadowy sort of cult. And God, he's got loads of amazing stories. A lot of his stories all concern just reality not being quite what it seems, or a perception of an event unfolding and then a twist. You see it in like M. Night Shyamalan.
You
know,
that guy.
That is like really basic level like interpretation. That's like a high school kid doing a Lovecraft film, in my opinion.
But then that's kind of what you get with the racism as well, because it's like everything appears alright on the surface. Because it's like everything, you know, everyone's happy and white, and then you scratch below the surface, you're like, no, these people hate. Because this is what happens, this is what keeps happening throughout the series, is like there'll be like this white neighbourhood where everything's fine, and then black people turn up, and then suddenly everyone gets evil. Or, you know, that's that weird. Like,
it's hard to think of any instance of someone creating any sort of art which is sort of universally acknowledged as being really high quality, but then their sort of driving intention, or that is the driving intention, but just their personality is completely deplorable, but then it gets celebrated, their artwork gets celebrated, you know, decades from their death, but completely subverting
the intention. Yeah.
That's
pretty unique. It's good though, isn't it? I like it. Yeah.
Oh, I need to check that out.
No, definitely cool. Check it out.
There's a series of Alan Moore comments as well. I'm turning my head there, so you've probably heard me move away from the mic a bit because I'm just looking for it. It's fucking amazing. Neonomicon, I think it was.
Was Alan Moore the guy behind Sin City?
No, that's Frank Miller.
Oh, it's Frank Miller.
Alan Moore did Watchmen.
Oh, okay, yeah, sorry, that's it, that's it. Yeah.
Loads of crazy things. V for Vendetta.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much everything by Alan Moore is worth a read. Some of it gets pretty weird. But yeah, so he did a few different ones. He did one, Providence. He's obviously like hugely into the lore and everything behind behind H.P. Lovecraft's work. And yeah, he wrote I started reading his comic Providence, and then I started reading Call of Cthulhu. And then I realised, oh shit, I need to go back and start with Providence again, because he's just referencing loads of things and almost creating a backstory of lots of different bits and bobs, or just having a separate story that just has a little touch upon something.
Right, really, okay, yeah.
A Lovecraft story, but yeah, it's a lot to be dealing with. But then Neonomicon is a dark story, very brutal, but yeah, well worth checking out. I'm sure there's another one as well. But yeah, Alan Moore. He's always like, you know, a very interesting character on those sort of matters. He wrote Watchmen, of course, which was
He's always the person, like, because I'm not very involved in that world at all, but he's always the one I hear referenced and lauded and appreciated the most when those sort of discussions are happening.
Yeah, he's completely, he doesn't do any interviews or anything like that anymore at all, and he used to do them very infrequently, but now he just pops out of the woodwork once in a blue moon. The last time he sort of made a public statement was just around the last general election. It was kind of calling for, you know, we need to vote for the party that is not the complete fascist cunts.
That's Labour, if anyone listening is confused.
So yeah, like that's the last time he came out of the woodwork. I'm sure that's he's probably got a lot to say about what's going on nowadays.
Oh God, yeah.
Who the fuck knows? But yeah. What else? What else? Fucking. Yeah, so the allergy single's out. It's called, what's it called again?
What is it called?
It's called I'm On It, and I am on it. It's me and Skunkadelic.
Yes.
My homie from Cardiff.
I know Skunkadelic.
Yeah, you know
Skunkadelic. But I know him through my ex-girlfriend. It's weird. We have a weird connection through my ex, who I haven't spoken to for many, many years.
Mm.
But yeah, we have a connection through her.
He's a top dude.
He is a top dude, isn't he? Yeah.
He put on a lot of events over the years. Every time I played in Cardiff, it was always...
Did he recently get engaged?
Yes, I believe he did. Congratulations to me.
I don't want to make sure that's right before I say it out loud. I whispered it. I realize we're still recording, but I whispered it.
But he, we've been meaning to do something for years and years, and allergies, Bristol guys, who have just been churning things out. They just do things right. Jalapeno Records as well, kind of breakbeat, kind of funky type of business, and they just always. They go about their business properly.
Yeah.
I have a lot of respect for that, and I'm very blessed to have been on their last three projects. And yeah, as we said before, got that bizarre little Radio 2 feature the other day.
So. Yeah.
It's coming out, so it's up for pre-order at the moment. It's the 7-inch of the 45 of I'm On It. And there's another tune on the B side as well. So yeah, go cop that, motherfuckers.
So is there an album?
Other suckers.
Is there an album?
Yeah, there is. There's an album which is called Say the Word.
I thought that was out. That's what I mean. So that the album's out.
Yeah.
But the single is being done as a special.
I think it's the last single from the.
Right. Okay. I get you.
From the album. Right? Yeah. It's just their fan base. They want more vinyl. They want little collectibles. They want 7-inches. It's an inspiration. It's inspired me, actually. I did an interview with Money Shot from Allergies, and he had some fan questions afterwards. And one of the questions was, "Why don't I ever put my shit out on vinyl?" And it made me just go, "Yeah, because I'm too idle to."
But, I mean, to be fair, you've got Pete Cannon in your stables. You could quite easily get a. Well, up for that, can you?
It's coming, that, you know. Yeah, it's happening. So that did make what the thing is really is, like, normally we've always operated on the basis that me and Pete Cannon make an album pretty much one every year, and then we go on tour in the autumn, and So, and we're always just cutting it fine right to the last minute. It's like, it's how I used to do homework at school. You know, I'm just that guy that.
No, I know that, but what I mean is you've got Pete in your, and he makes a lot of vinyl.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So you've got a plug for the.
Oh totally, yeah.
For the vinyl.
So I mean, he was. It never used to be like that, but he was very much inspired by his old heroes. I think he just started reading a couple of years ago Wiley's biography and a few other like biographies of old school hardcore people and stuff, and just I think that got him into like the whole process of like, yeah, we used to get the record done and then burn and then go down here and sell them all at this shop and rah rah rah, and that's why Pete suddenly was like, fuck it, I'm starting a record label, M4 Records,
and look what he's done with it.
Yeah, fucking, he's absolutely smashing it,
mate.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous,
absolutely smashing
the rolling thing he's done. Yeah, he's just, every time I see him, always, every time he pops up on my social media feed, he's just doing something great.
I've lost track of it, and it's my mate that I make music with. And yeah. I don't even know what he's got.
No, but you can't. It's impossible to keep up with this. Yeah, it's mad. It's insane. But yeah.
Well, that's it. He's always been like the, he was always the guy with the super creative guy that it was just almost frustrating. Like, he's just onto the next creative thing without getting it out.
Well, it's like the guy at school who like played football really well and then was like, oh, I'm bored of this, and then picked up a tennis racket and was like acing everyone. It's like, for fuck's sake, man, stop being good at everything.
So like, focus.
It's just annoying.
And then like, but then when he's actually put his mind to that, he's absolutely smashed it out of the water. So big up Pete Cannon once again, as we always do on this podcast. So I've decided that
we love you, Pete.
Last year's album, we're working on new music of course, and I'm working on some new stuff elsewhere as well, but we're going to put out our last album, Wallop. The last album we put out, not our last album, I should hasten to add. But we're gonna stick that out on vinyl. Hopefully in time for Christmas. I'm working on getting that in the motion now. I mean, as things stand, we should have it ready in a couple of months. You know, all the lockdown whatnot might interfere with that. I don't know. Who the fuck knows? But we are working on getting some vinyl out, so that's exciting.
Well, vinyl plants are definitely still running.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, exactly. Pav did his, you know, that Pav from Foreign Beggars.
Yeah,
sure. Obviously, he's got his got his new label, Foreign Currency.
Of course, yeah.
He did that track with Suk Knight, and that got pressed to vinyl in that delicious blue and orange.
Yeah.
Because he put the thing up on Instagram, and it was just, it looked like FIMO. Like the,
yeah.
He was like, anyone guess what this is? And I had no fucking idea, because I had no idea about that world. And then two people were like, oh, that's going to be a vinyl record. And then it got pressed, and I was like, oh man, that's mad. Like, seeing it become...
I saw that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that looks beautiful.
Mm. But yeah, shout out to Pav.
I mean, that's it. I mean, I haven't put any albums out on vinyl. When I first... The first album I had out, which is on Pavan's label, his old label, Dented, that was just on CD. That was right in like 2007. It was right when vinyl really trailed off and people just weren't buying records, and all those old, you know, all the pressing plants were going under and whatnot.
You picked the right time, basically.
Yeah.
you always spinning your finger on the pulse.
I'm here, guys. Ta-da, I've arrived.
Everyone's just sweeping up.
Yeah. I mean, I think I said something on the first track on my first album. I said something about, the first two lines are, witness my arrival, voice sounding ripe on the vinyl, and it's never been out on vinyl. So I might put that song out, just that song, just for the fuck of it. As it stands, we're going to put out the Wallop album. If that, you know, if I'm sat with hundreds of copies in my front room, then so be it. We tried, and you know, failure is part of the journey. If it does well, I might backtrack and start putting out older albums and future releases as well, you know, because there is a market. I still sell, like, the only thing I've had out on vinyl level was, apart from collaborations on different people's albums and whatnot, is the Subcultures 12-inch from 2006, I think it was. And I still sell one or two of those every now and then. So it's like, those people aren't looking for that song.
Yeah.
I'm sure, like, they're looking for a piece of vinyl.
But this is the thing, I've got, like, the whole Discogs marketplace. I know American rappers who will not sell to Europeans on Discogs because they know that they're not going to listen to the album. They're just going to buy it and then sell it for a higher price. Or just buy it and keep it in their collection. Like, there's a lot of people who own a lot of vinyl and will never open it.
Yeah,
and it's just this weird. I understand, like, you know, if you've bought it, you can do whatever you want with it. But that artist wanted that record to be listened to, and it's just a very odd thing for me.
One thing I'll say, like, pressing vinyl is incredibly bad for the environment as well. It's like a super irresponsible thing to be doing at this point in life.
Shh, don't ruin it.
Yeah.
There's always one, isn't there?
Yeah, maybe I'll fuck it off, actually. We'll see. Yeah. I'll get one out, that'll do. And then we'll leave it there. Just one more chicken wing, I've turned that to shit. But this is it. This is the shame of existing in 2020. Yeah. All the things you like are fucked up.
Terrible. Yes. Yeah.
In that same interview with Money Shot from the Allergies, he said to me in Skunkadelic, "So guys, Adidas or Nike?" I just kind of felt like, fuck both of those guys. I don't give them any more money. I don't know. It's a strange turning point, isn't it? You know, we're conflicted. We've got the old metrics of success and desire from the old world, but we're getting reborn into the dystopian future.
If we're getting reborn into an environment where we have to, like, I don't know, it's like the fast fashion thing, like with, you know, Primark, Zara, whatever. These are fashion brands that we're told not to buy from because of the, you know, the human rights abuses and the environmental impact, but then we don't really have a choice. A lot of people don't have a choice.
Well,
there's the money, you know.
That's very true.
Income. It's a difficult one. Like, to live ethically is expensive.
Yeah, it's very difficult to be out of the trap.
It's the same with organic food. It's when that became a thing. It's like, well, I can't afford to eat organically. That's the problem.
Yeah, you can't get out of the situation entirely. You can do little things, but if you live in this country, you can't even like go off the grid and just do your own thing.
No.
You couldn't possibly do that without some sort of connection and some sort of footprint or whatnot.
There was one guy who did it. There was a documentary made about it, and he was like making his own soap. Like it was a fucking nightmare. Like, his life was a nightmare to me. He was enjoying it, but he wasn't. I'm pretty sure. Like, everything was a trial. Everything was a chore. Like, there was no, you know, you'd get back from your day out ever, and you'd have to just do everything like from scratch. And it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, this is it. People romanticise.
But then, is that because we're so used to just how we live now? Like, it's because that's how people used to survive.
Yeah, I mean.
You know what I mean? Should we just get back to basics?
I'm too mollycoddled. I'm too soft. You know, just as you said that, I looked to my right and saw that I've got a lovely scented candle that I might light. You know, so there's no hope for me. I'm not living in the woods, man. I'm not wiping my ass with dog leaves. It's not happening, man. I'm after the fucking nuclear holocaust. I'm just going to be a piece of
flesh. I'm just going to kill
twitching on the forest floor. Yeah. Forget about it.
Yeah,
it's a wrap. Talk about rap. Is this a hip hop podcast? What rap music do you listen to recently?
Nothing. No. There's some good stuff coming. I spoke on the last podcast about Arm & Hammer.
Yeah.
Which is the collaboration between Elucid and Billy Woods, who are two of my favourite rappers. And Elucid from Arm & Hammer is working on a new project with a producer called The Lasso.
Right.
Who is signed to Melon Music Group. He released an album earlier this year with a rapper called Psy Spiritual. Quite a trippy album. And he's back with Elucid, and they've formed a crew called Small Bills, and they've got an album coming on Melon Music Group, which I've had the pleasure of hearing, and it's really fucking good. Elucid's just a crazy rapper, man. Like, the way he uses voice, like, it's just, he uses voice as an instrument. I don't know, he's on the Metabeats album.
Yeah.
Caviar Crackle. That's the first time I ever heard him. But yeah, he's just got this imposing voice. He sings on this new album. It's just a really interesting sound he has, and I'm a big fan of it. And
nice.
I urge everyone to listen to it.
Talking of Armored Hammer, I saw that they are doing, I'm talking of what we were talking about before,
a live streaming. Yeah.
So they're doing like a live stream that you pay for. It's like $15 or something.
Yeah.
And they do a show. I want to check that out.
Well, they're performing their new album, Shrines, which is the album I was on about last time.
Right,
and it's the first time it's been performed because they haven't had a chance to perform it since the lockdown. So it's like it should be interesting because, like, for my money, both of those guys are two of the best MCs ever. Like, and that's not me, that's not hyperbole, that's me
that's
genuinely
cool
echoing the sound of of the fans as well.
Yeah.
And the industry seemed to just be like, I mean, Billy Woods has been around for, he's been putting albums out since like early 2000s, but it's only sort of the last like 3 to 5 years that people have been like, oh shit, this guy is,
he's got something going on.
And so together, like, and I, and apologies to Woods, but there are people I play Woods' music to, and they're just like, I can't listen to that.
It's a difficult listen,
because he raps slightly off beat, which he, you know, he fully owns. He's got his own bar. He's like, fuck out of here with them late reps.
Yeah.
Like, he knows that people don't like his rapping style, but he does it so well for me. I don't know.
Well, that probably should, you know, the fact that he's been going for 20 years as a relative unknown suggests that he does what he does, you know, without trying to fit into any parameters, you know.
The thing is, he's an unknown, but he's like, from his peers' point of view, from the other artist's point of view, he's like God level MC. So it's like, well, he's been making these amazing albums. I remember I said he did an album with like Vaudel Mega from Cannibal Ox, like,
yes,
originally. So one of his first albums, I think, was with Vaudel Mega. So he's from that era, that sort of, he's like a direct lineage from the Def Trux era. So he's been around since then, and yeah, just like all these MCs rate him, all these journalists rate him, but it's just the listenership that has to sort of cotton on. And they're getting there, but...
For me, I've said this before on this podcast, I think the tune that really got me was The Man Who Would Be King.
That's off his, which album's that? It's not Today I Wrote Nothing, it's... I can't remember, but yeah.
Yeah, that, just the lyricism of that, about, you know, like an Alan Quatermain character going into Africa and carving up and take what he wants, but just showing it from a different angle. Of like,
oh, yeah, it's the one who was talking about the, and like, bury the bodies and,
Let's give him a proper plug and find out when that gig is and whatnot.
I think he was raised in what is now, or what was then known as Rhodesia. And I think his dad was like some sort of revolutionary or something involved in that.
Oh wow!
And then he moved to the Caribbean and then moved to New York. And so he talks. So his lyricism is steeped in this like African history. He's very, I know every bar he says I have to go and like research, it's ridiculous, man. Like, let me find the details though.
That's Zimbabwe, right?
That's the thing, I don't even know what it was, what it is now.
Or maybe it's probably a territory that incorporates several different
countries. Wait a minute, where's the, let me get there.
Showing my ignorance there, but.
Armand Hammer, live in concert, one night only, Shrines, audio visual experience, the 30th of September.
All right, that's coming up. What is it? It'll be like EST or something, whether Eastern Starboard Time or something.
Eastern Seaboard Time, I think it is. Starboard.
Check the Starboard.
From the label Instagram, as we can't tour during this time, we got together with frequent collaborator Joseph Malti to create an event that brings Armand Hammer's live performance to fans as a unique audio-visual experience. Grab a ticket at the link in the bio to join us for this one-time noon chorus experience that will never live on the internet. Oh, so it's not even going to be recorded and put out for the future. So it is.
That's cool. I like
the sound. But that's the whole point of a concert, isn't it? It's like you go. That's why people have this thing about streaming concerts. They're like, no, if you go to a concert, that should be it. That should be your. If you didn't go to it, that should be your loss.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how concerts should be. And so that's what they're bringing back. And it's, it's nice.
Oh, man, well, that is as good as it's going to get.
Yeah, so go to Backwards Studios Instagram, which is double Z, Backwards Z, Studios Z, and click the link in their bio and find out all the details.
And you can see what all the fuss is about.
Yeah. And while we're on the subject of Backwards, they are releasing an album by a female singer called Fielded, who is on the Armand Hammer album. She was on Billy Woods' album, last album. She's makes this sort of dreamy pop, very Kate Bush heavy influence. I've had the pleasure of hearing the album. I think it comes out a couple of weeks on Backwards Studios, and it is just sublime. Like, it is really, really good. Like, completely different to what I would normally be reviewing, but I'm reviewing it for The Wire next month, and it is a joy to listen to. And Elucid's on it, Billy Woods is on it. It's just a really good, I don't know.
Nice. There you go, you heard it from the man himself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Tim Fielded. Fish coming through with it's, the knowledge. It's called Demisexual Lovelace as well, which is a great album title.
Very intriguing indeed. Mm. Indeed.
Yeah, it's a very sensual.
Very intriguing and endearing.
A very sensual, sexual album, in fact, and it's great. I'm a big fan.
God damn. Is that sexy time music, or is it a?
I'm just pleased to see you.
Fucking hell! What have I been listening to?
Have you got a new single out with the allergies, Ben?
No, but I've been listening to a song by Whitesnake called "Slide It In." That's what my obsession has been recently. Have you ever heard that song?
No, but that sounds like some classic 80s rock.
Yeah, it's really grotty.
Verging on porn.
Yeah, it basically like the first verse goes, "You talk too much, never saying what's on your mind. I got what you need. I'm gonna slide it in right to the top." It's pretty,
It's that classic women's rights intersexual.
Yes.
Sexual.
I got sucked into this Whitesnake rabbit hole from Limmy as well, from just checking out his stream at some point. I turned it on and he was watching a live concert of Whitesnake on YouTube, and he was just mocking the lead singer for supposed to be this like big, you know, sex symbol. And he just does this intro of a track where he goes, "Oh, I've got a question for you. Is this still the City of Love?" And Limmy was just taking the piss out of it, going, "This guy just sounds like Alan Partridge or something. He's supposed to be this big sex god." But, so that made me kind of...
dip into
I think that, and also Cobra Kai, how everyone's getting excited about that at the moment.
I watched 2 episodes the other day, and I was very impressed. I couldn't believe it was him.
Yeah,
it's the same cast. That's fucking amazing.
Yeah, for those who don't know about Cobra Kai, if you've been living under a rock, it actually came out a couple of years ago on YouTube, but no one gave a fuck because it was on YouTube.
Oh, really?
It was like on YouTube Prime. Or
oh shit!
Like that.
Okay.
So I mean, I think YouTube tried to do like an Amazon Prime Netflix.
Cobra Kai was the antagonist in the Karate Kid movies in the 80s. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the rival karate school, which what was his name?
Who the Johnny the baddie?
Yeah,
I don't know. Fucking Johnny blonde hair.
Yeah. We've done our research.
To be honest, someone told me about this a couple of years ago, and I just thought, this sounds shit. This is naff. Mm. I don't want to see this. But they actually completely nailed it. It's really well written. Maybe I don't want to spoil it, but I think it maybe dips off a little bit, but I'll stick with it. But certainly when you first start watching it, the same with anything nowadays, really. Like, I don't know if you need 20 hours of it.
Mate, that's why I'm in love with things that are just like one season.
Yeah, I think, I definitely recommend watching a bit of Cobra Kai, but one season will do it, really. You get the point. But with that, like, there's just a lot of... a lot of old 80s rock going on in there and stuff. Mm.
Really.
You know, I'm a child of the 80s, so are you, you know. I never was into it at the time, but it was just there, you know.
Mm.
And now I like to hear a bit of that, you know. I like a bit of Whitesnake when I'm doing the washing up. Mm. So, yeah, that's my hot tip of the week. Slide It In by Whitesnake.
What did I watch that was one season? Godless. Is that what we talked about?
Oh, yeah,
we talked
about that before. I didn't watch it.
No, but that's one season.
Neil Gaiman, isn't it?
It just ties. Is it Neil Gaiman?
I think so.
No.
I'm thinking of American Gods.
Yeah, no. Godless is the one about the. It's a mining community in America and set in the Midwest in like the Old West times.
Wait, no, we haven't talked about this.
Have we not? Okay.
And it's like all women.
So, yeah, so 2 years ago, it's 2 years old now, right. On Netflix. And. It's about a mining town where all the men get killed in a mining accident. I think it's something like 70 or 80 husbands and sons and fathers get killed in a mining accident, leaving all the widows behind to defend themselves in this Wild West town. And there's this group of wandering killers going from town to town and fucking people up who are looking for their lost treasure, which one guy has got. And it's just about that what happens. But it's literally 7 episodes.
Perfect.
And that's all that happens. It's got a really strong lead characters. It's just a really good, and it's set in the Western times, which is just, I don't know.
Well, like I said before, I've been getting super into that. I mean, I just like got mad into Red Dead Redemption 2 about 6 months ago. and just smashed through that, and then just became a bit obsessed, watched loads of old Clint films, Once Upon a Time in the West.
Magnificent Seven.
I didn't see Magnificent
Seven. Mate, watch that. That's one of my favourites.
But what else? Just the whole Dollars trilogy, Fistful of Dollars and all that.
Yeah, a few dollars more.
Fucking brilliant, yeah. Went through all those. And just so, yeah, I did see that pop up on Netflix a few times, and I was kind of like, is that going to be good?
No, it's really, really good.
All right, well, on your recommendation.
And also, what's weird is that one of the main women in it, I was like, she looks just like my mate Sherelle. Sherelle is an Irish girl that I know.
Mm.
And sure enough, this girl is from, I think, the same place in Ireland that Sherelle's from.
Oh, shit.
I was like, she's got to be Irish. And yeah, she was.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Shout out to the Irish.
Is she an Irish character?
No. She's American, but she just looks Irish.
Mm.
There you go. And sorry, on that note. Yeah.
Fucking hell. With Ben and Tim, Dr. Syntax and Ginger Slim, we like to watch TV, listen to rap music and hair rock.
And then talk about it
on
the internet afterwards.
What else is joyous in this world? It's the autumn, you know. The days are getting colder and shorter.
It's my 40th birthday next week.
Oh, shit, wow, son. Wow. Everyone in the world round to Tim's house, 400 people. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be fine.
In groups of six. Six at a time.
I went to the park the other day, and there was a band playing, like a really cool band. I'm not snitching on them now. But actually,
well, you haven't told their names.
Well, exactly. I don't even know their names. but it was like, apparently the police had been down and just said, like, yeah, just make sure everyone's in their group of six. And there's fucking shit loads of people there, just like in different little spots. I mean, you know, it was cool. We weren't interacting with people. I suppose that's okay if everyone's kind of sensible and it works. But it's very... I'm getting back onto this now, which we would not speak of, but...
He who shall confusing. Not be named.
But yeah, fucking live music and that. I'd love to do a gig
one. Oh, yeah, imagine that, mate.
Well, I'm seriously considering that, the Twitch way of doing things.
Or just do it like Le Hen. Just put some speakers out your window.
Yeah.
And just broadcast just that way.
I don't think my neighbours would appreciate
it. No, I don't think, I don't think anyone would appreciate it. And to be fair, like, most people couldn't hear it.
Hey, where I am in Bristol, I walked down the road the other day and there's a woman, it's not quite Len, but she's playing a harp. It's fucking beautiful.
Wow.
She's in her garden, just giving a concert to people coming back from Sainsbury's.
Just for reference, for anyone outside of Bristol, Ben lives in a nice area.
Bristol is a nice area. One big nice
I
area.
Mean, come on. No one's playing a harp in my area, Ben. He might be like throwing it through a window to steal more harps.
They're just drinking cans of it. Am I
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
hey.
Hey.
Fucking hell. Harp. That's a disgusting beer.
It is, yeah. Gross. What are we on?
Well, you know what? That might be a good place to leave it. We're on just short of the hour mark. I've had a fucking cracking time chin-wagging with you.
No, as always.
I'd like to say chin-wagging was... I was trying to put that forward as the name of this podcast. It got poo-pooed by Tim, but I'm just getting it in there now anyway.
I do not remember this conversation happening, but I stand by my decision. Chin-wagging is not...
Chin-wagging with Dr. Syntax and Ginger Slim. Well, you know, we're called the Syntax Podcast.
Yeah.
Is that a portmanteau? I always forget this. Portmanteau, or is that a fucking truncation? Portmanteau, isn't it? That's what that is. When you get two words and smash them together.
Yeah.
Mush them together like a face in a pillow.
Mm. I think you're just bitter that I came up with a better name than chin wagging.
I think it's got legs. Maybe that's a solo project. Maybe that's just me on.
We'll just
own.
Do a side project. You just diss me. It's good to see you.
And you, sir. So
I should point out that we don't see each other in between doing these podcasts. So this is like a catch up.
That's right.
Well, not because of any animosity, just because, you know.
Life gets in the way. Yeah. Life finds in the way.
Life finds life a way also. To get in the way. Shout out to Jeff. Once more. Well, we start with Jeff Goldblum, we can finish with Jeff Goldblum.
As the world will.
Mm. But take care of yourselves.
Peace.
Peace.